What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday Forum. Joining me this week to talk about various issues, Lorcan Nyhan, who's a columnist at the Sunday Independent, head of training at the Communications Clinic, Pauline O'Reilly, Green Party Senator, and Pádraig Tobin, the leader of Aintu. Good morning and welcome one and all. Let's start off with RTE. Lorcan, as someone in the communications business, what do you think of the package that the minister finally came up with and got through Cabinet?
I think, look, it's very good news for RTE. I think Simon Harris said that himself, that they should be very, very happy with it. I can understand it politically. So I can understand the idea politically why you don't want to touch the TV license and leave the status quo there because nobody gets blamed for the status quo. I understand why they just wanted the funding issue maybe dealt with for a period of time, particularly coming up to an election. So I understand it politically. I must say, for me, I think that that model doesn't make sense anymore. I don't think the model of the TV license makes sense in the online media world. And I think there's a couple of reasons for it. Number one, every major European country has moved away from it. So they've either gone for fully direct exchequer funding, they do that in Netherlands, they do it in Germany, or they've gone for taxation. So what they do in Finland, which I think is a good model, is there's a taxation linked to public service media. Corporations pay it as well as individuals. That raises about 500 million. And they're a similar size country to us, so it raises significantly more. And I think why that's...
And nobody escapes.
And nobody escapes it because it's run via taxation and no corporation escapes either. I think the corporation part is interesting because when we're paying for public service media, not broadcasting, public service media, what we're actually paying for is to be able to live in a society where people are informed, and if people don't want to or can't pay for access to media, they can still get access to news of a variety of different sorts. So it's not that you're paying to watch or listen to RTE, you're paying to live in a society that is informed. And I think that's how we need to start looking at it. And I sort of think they need to change the model, and also they need to very slowly, but they should be moving towards a model where it's not just public service broadcasting, it's not just RTE, it's yourselves and News Talk, it's the likes of even the Dublin Inquirer here who do great work, great investigative work, can apply for a fund where they get state funding decided independently to make sure people are informed, because the days that everybody gets their news from one entity are done, and we need an informed public.
Pádraig?
Yeah, like I think the TV license is dead, except the government hadn't got the guts to actually bury it on this occasion.
I mean, there is a problem with the mechanism. Initially, I thought they were giving them 700 million on top of everything else, but it's not. It's they will make up the deficit between what the license is designed to recover and what it actually recovers, which does seem like a license to defaulters to continue to default.
It is a fudge in actual fact. Like, there's no clear direction on how they're going to deal with defaulters in this scenario. There's a number of proposals that maybe will happen if the government get their act together in relation to this. The minister said that a hybrid model was the worst of all models, and the minister has now plumped for a hybrid model in relation to this. And I do agree with the issue there. I think we have to ask the question, what is RTE for? So, in other words, RTE was designed at a time where the media landscape was radically different. And now we have a situation where public service broadcasting can be produced by a range of different broadcasters. And I do think, you know, RTE is a very confused model. It's a model that has a big commercial sector. It has also is competing online with the likes of the Irish Times, News Talk, The Indo, etc. And is hoovering up commercial advertisements from a lot of those organisations. And I honestly think that the minister hasn't grasped the nettle here. There isn't a real plan. This is a fudge until the next general election.
Pauline?
Yeah, well, look, I came from Galway this morning, and I would hazard a guess, I'm sure I'm right, that more people listen to Galway Bay FM than they do to some of the other channels. You know, I have an issue around local media as well, just as you mentioned there, Lord.
But is it a fudge? Is your ministerial colleague?
It's a compromise.
In the Green Party.
It's a compromise, and she's been open about that compromise, and I think we all know that compromise has been on the table for some time. I think one of the best parts about this, And what she was really keen to get was that security over a number of years so that RTE can put in place the reforms. And that's what she has. So it is a sustainable funding model for a 3-year period so that the reforms that RTE themselves have said that they're going to implement will be implemented. And so I think that, you know, some of the criticisms are well founded, but it is a compromise and it's got a bit of exactly what she wanted. And as you say, there is some Exchequer funding in there, particularly to make up that deficit that hadn't been made up in the past for the over 70-year-olds.
It would appear to be rewarding bad behaviour.
No, I don't. Well,
the minister has promised that she's going to provide funding, even though she doesn't know how much money is going to go towards redundancies. So we're told that about 400 staff are going to go, that they were made redundant. When she was asked how much was that going to cost, she said she didn't know. She was asked even for a ballpark figure in relation to that. She refused to give it. So she has signed the cheque here without actually knowing the details of exactly what RTE's plans are in terms of downsizing. And as well, like Pauline, you'd support progressive taxation, absolutely. And you know, the licence fee is the same price for everybody, whether they're on €100,000 or whether they're on €20,000 a year. It doesn't even make sense in terms...
Don't do that to slice pans, come on.
No, but it is
a
taxation.
If you're loaded, you pay more for your slice pan.
No, but the point is, it all comes out of the pocket. You know, whether you pay in a licence fee with a flat rate or whether you pay through taxation, it all comes out of the pocket.
People paying mad money every month for streaming services and for Sky. And when they add up all of those, they look at what they're paying for the TV license, and it is only a fraction of their total outgoings on these other services. So what is it about RTE that makes it the kicking boy, whereas there's no kicking back at the Skies who used to give us Gaelic games and do not?
There's two things in life you can't stop, and that's death and taxes. But you can stop paying a TV licence. And that's the problem here. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people have stopped paying that TV licence. And the government hasn't got a solution to make sure that they can have a fair, broad payment of that.
And many people are not paying their licence. Why? Because they have a dodgy box.
And people are doing it, I think, as a protest as well at the moment because of the fact that RTE has been run in such a shoddy manner for the last number of years. Many people feel that they don't have a responsibility to pay.
Yeah, look, I think the important thing here is if you are calling to remove the licence fee, you have to be calling to replace it with either significant Exchequer funding or probably a tax. I think the fair thing to do would be a tax. So I think you can't just say remove it. I also think if you move to a model where over a long period of time, you know, people had to apply for a fund to get their funding, that to show the work they did, show their plans, I think RTE would get a huge percentage of that on their own merits, because I think RTE do phenomenal work. They are maybe not always as popular as the local radio, but they're always second.
But so you get this thing, oh, I never watch RTE. Did you watch Cork and Clare last week? Oh, well, yes, I did. Did you watch the toy show? Well, my kids did. Yeah. I didn't. I was in the other room.
I was just flicking through and I happened to see it and I stood on it for an hour. So,
do you watch Fair City? No.
And we know the viewing numbers are significant consistently for RTE Radio as well as RTE Television, and they do huge investigative work. So we're not saying that RTE aren't doing a great job. It's just you have to look at the wider landscape.
I want to ask this because I've been advocating this for years and years and years now. But from two correspondents here, Andrew in Athlone says, in the Czech Republic, a small levy is added to every electricity bill which pays for public television and radio. No one can escape it. No need for inspectors or ads on the radio reminding you to pay your TV licence. Another one, just to add that our TV licence in Italy is taken off the electricity bill so nobody can avoid it. What is wrong with that? Because whether you've got a laptop or a phone or a television set, it needs to be powered by electricity, so you've got to be paying some electricity bill somewhere.
Yeah. See, the problem is if you introduce a household levy of some sort at the moment, because of the political history we have around the water charges, it is going to become a target of, let's say, political resistance among some, and there will be campaigns built on it. The government are wise enough to know that. They know that no government is going to revisit a water charges type situation ever again in this country because of the disastrous experience that the Labour Party had back in 2011, 2012. So my view is that, you know,
government is not governing and cannot govern. That's what you're saying. This place is ungovernable, that if people don't like a tax, they're simply not going to pay it.
I think the path of least resistance here will be a taxation through the revenue.
You think that's the best way to the revenue?
I honestly think that it is the fairest way in terms of the application of the fee towards people from different economic backgrounds. And also it is the way that people can't ignore their revenue. People have to pay their taxes. And it is the way to make sure that everybody pays something towards it.
Well, if you don't pay your electricity bill, the lights go out. Unless, of course, you have solar on your roof.
Yeah, but I honestly do think that the water charges has as a warning for most political parties to go down to, you know, not to go down the route of a household charge.
I think the electricity thing, I think that makes absolutely perfect sense. I think it's similar to a taxation. I think it's a pretty good model. I think maybe I'll always think the solution is more communication, but I think they're communicating this slightly wrong, where I think people will say, well, hang on, no, I don't watch RT. Whether it's true or not, they'll say, I don't watch it, therefore I shouldn't pay. That's not what you're paying for, or what's not what you should be paying for. You're paying for people to have access to news, and you're paying for people to be informed on what's going on, in the same way that even if you don't have kids in a primary school, you're pretty happy that your taxation goes to pay for school, because, you know, society needs schools. It's a much different level, but it's the exact same principle.
In other words, if you never go to a public library to borrow a book, public libraries and public parks are good things, that even if we never use them, we want them to be there.
And exactly. overall, the public do want RTE to be supported. And that's really what's coming out of this. So there's two different kind of arguments here. One is whether you pay at all, and the other one is how you pay. And there is a sum of money being given to On Post as part of this package as well, in order to make it easier. I mean, simply there's a lot of red tape sometimes with the license fee, but ultimately it's a crime not to pay it. Yeah. And let's not
pretend. But the idea here is, like the household charge, or if there were to be water charges, they would attach to the residence, not to the individual. Is that?
Yeah, look, I'm not talking about more reports, but there is a report that has to be presented within the next 3 months to Cabinet, and that is on how to up the collection. But as I say, we now at least can put a line under this. There is funding for RTE. They can do their planning on the basis that funding is there for 3 years. And, you know, some people do get the licence for free. That's the over 70-year-olds. And RTE have kind of been picking up the tab for that all along. So this is going to ensure that they're not doing that anymore, that actually they are getting that money from the Exchequer. So I think all of those things are good things. I do think that we need more funding for other kinds of media and broadcasting, but that's another day's work.
Mm. Pather, the whole idea of RT moving off its campus in Dublin 4, obviously flog off the land. You could, when you see the aerial views of the site, it is still quite enormous, even after a part of it has been sold off. And building a brand new complex fit for the streaming age and so on somewhere else. What do you think?
I think that would be a good idea. I think in the end of the day, that's a lot of any commercial organisation that had vast tracts in really high real estate locations would consider moving to a different location to obviously crystallise that value and invest it in other aspects of their business. And I think RTE should do the same. And there's often been the argument, especially amongst people in provincial Ireland, that the location of RTE is also an issue as well, in terms of its editorial issue, that Dublin 4 mentality has been part of RTE's editorial.
Yeah, but often hear the politicians grumbling about going out to the M50 to Virgin Media. It's too far away. Well, compared to nipping up the road to Dublin 4.
You'd be hard pressed now to find a politician who's going to dodge a camera, especially no matter where it's located at this stage.
Lorcan, that whole idea of getting rid of the asset, taking the money, and according to the reports, it might cost 300 million to refurb, but only 130, 140 to build from scratch. Doesn't ring true to me, I have to say.
No, yeah, and that came out in the statements during the week, then that they were the figures. And I must say, when I saw it myself, I was like, I'm not really sure how that makes sense. But I think, look, you have to, if you're given the funding as well, I presume that there's a trust there that the governance issues have been sorted, that the leadership is right, and that the leadership are going to make the right decisions. So, you know, I don't know enough about the situation, but I presume what I would say on a wider level is, if you're given that level of funding, I presume the government have full trust that RT are going to make the right financial decisions, that the governance is in place, and that they've properly looked into it, done the due diligence.
You can't micromanage that, you know, once you have that level of trust. But I mean, I'd certainly be more than willing to go into a Galway studio, but those facilities aren't there. So everybody's travelling to Dublin to do
interviews. Okay, and we hear that the two chimneys down in Poolbeg are going to get a lick of paint. Does that mean we'll have to preserve the mast in Dublin 4 as well as an iconic reminder of where we came from?
Well, I think we might be struggling to find people who'll rally around that particular campaign. I do think that the Poolbeg pillars obviously are iconic elements of Dublin's image, etc. And it would be good to see them preserved into the future.
As a UCD graduate, we like the old Donnybrook Eiffel Tower that was there. So let's keep it.
All right. Industrial archaeology, that's what that is. Anyway, I want to talk about the Dublin City's plans to constrict traffic starting next month, which is only days away. Pauline. You're always being blamed for this.
I don't know that I would say constrict traffic is how I would define this. What I would say is the vast majority of people coming into the city are coming on buses, and they have a right to be able to get in as well as everyone else. And at the moment, we do know that our roads are choked with car traffic. Most, if not all of us, sometimes get in a car, sometimes hop on our bike, sometimes walk, sometimes go on a bus. And you need to be able to ensure that your capital city can, you know, you can get around it no matter what form of transport you're using. And I really, you know, I don't like this argument that it'll take me a bit more time to go around in my car. Well, try sitting on a bus and being choked when cars are pulling out in front of you. Try, as I do, on a bike when you have to cross the quays because the cars are coming straight in front of you. So this is about balance. There's actually quite small measures being taken. I think it was the right decision by DCC to move forward with it, but it was also the right decision to compromise, and that's what's being done here, so that we can get started.
I want to see more active transport in the city. I've been cycling in from the Phoenix Park into Leinster House for the last 13 years, and it's faster to get in by bike than it is by car. But I will say that the Green Party's approach is more stick than carrot, and that's a difficulty I have.
This is DCC, Pather.
Yes,
come on,
but it's the Green Party.
On
Dublin City Council are also significantly in favour of this. This is part of your objectives
in relation to this.
So, for example, people from my own constituency in County Meath have been crying out for a rail line from Navan to Dublin.
Yep.
You know, tens of thousands of cars. 80% of people who leave my county every day do so by car because there isn't a dependable public transport option to them. You know, many people around the country will be depending on buses, but many of those are suffering from ghost buses because there isn't enough drivers or mechanics that are being employed at the moment to keep those buses running on time and in a dependable nature. So I believe that what we need to do is create the proper public transport, dependable public transport options for people. That will have a better way of migrating people into public transport. But this situation is creating the stick, so you won't be able to travel from west to east along the quays, north or south, as a result of this.
I'm looking at the map here, and if you want to get from Burg Quay to Aston's Quay, which is straight across O'Connell Bridge, okay? Mm. It's a straight line. You can't do that. You have to turn up Dallier Street, and then if you come around Westmoreland Street and you want to turn left onto Aston's Quay, you're not allowed to do that.
To go back down.
So where do you go? How do you actually reach that key?
So this objective,
I can't see
this objective
on this
is
map.
To stop people crossing the city in terms of private transport, by car transport. And I'm like, right across the country, people are crying out for public transport options that are dependable. They're not being put in place. And reality, these types of decisions should be done afterwards. The cart is being put before the horse.
Look, I mean, Pather, you talk about wanting more services, not having ghost buses. I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about here. But that means that you have to make changes. You can't just continue to keep going the way things are and then expect a new result.
Lorcan.
Like, we have one new bus service every single week rolling out across the country. And I know that you'll talk about the Navan bus. And absolutely, that needs to be addressed, as does a train line, which is why it's in the All-Ireland Rail Review and why we want to put funding behind
it. It's on the horizon. It's in the future. It's not going to happen in the next 10 years.
To take a first step.
There's a couple of, I think, maybe wider points being made on it. I mean, I think we do consistently come to studios like this and talk about, you know, inaction or compromises or fudges or people, you know, rowing back against public pressure. I think it's pretty commendable, actually, that the amount of public pressure that was put on to relook at this or to, you know, go again has been, you know, listened to, but then say, no, actually, we've looked at this, we're going ahead. So I think it's an action. And I think people have been crying out for a long time to make the city work better for everybody. It's an action. Now, I think what always happens in these changes is that it's always felt more keenly if your life gets harder or worse or more inconvenient than the prospect of it getting better. So if you can currently get across to where you want to go in your car in 10 minutes and now it's going to take 30 minutes, you feel that really keenly. While if currently it takes you 40 minutes in a bus, you don't maybe feel the 10 or 20 minutes back as much. So the vocal anger or the vocal frustration is going to be from car users. I would say, let's give it a chance. Let's give it 3 months. Let's not lose our minds in 2 days when something goes wrong. Let people try something, say, oh, we need to adapt that plan and go again. Because I think the goal of we can cycle easily and get a bus across the city makes sense.
They have decided that the bridges will remain open to north-south traffic. Yeah.
There's another point here that has to be said as well. On Grafton Street at the moment, there's 9 empty retail units. And right across Ireland, we are being cursed significantly with the death of physical retail in our town centres. It is really apparent in so many places. And it is becoming more difficult to drive into towns and to park in towns. And that is having a significant effect in relation to retail. It's pushing retail out to the M50 and to those out-of-town experiences. And it's one of those aspects that's pushing retail online.
Why would I want to go into town if I didn't have that mixture of coffee bars, pubs and shops? That's why I go into the city centre. If the shops go,
can I just
there?
Come in on that? Because you're putting two things together that don't necessarily go together. Like, this is about making it easier for people to hop on a bus and get in and use the city centre. That's entirely what this proposal is about.
You put your sofa and on your crossbar.
But I actually think that Lorcan is dead right here. I've been in Amsterdam and spoken to the council there, and they actually have the same difficulties here. Anytime you bring in a new measure, people get really worried and anxious and concerned. I totally understand that until they see how it's working. If it's not working, you make adjustments. But you have to take some kind of leap of faith that underpinning all of this is an attempt to make it a fairer city, easier to get around, more accessible for people, and not only.
Does anyone know what the resolution to the Guinness problem is? Getting the Guinness from James's Gate down the quays.
Apparently a longer pipeline so that they can pump it straight into the pubs. But I think there's probably a slightly different issue there.
No, but I mean, it's to get to the docks exported.
Just to Patrick's point, there was a very, very good piece written by the economist Barry Rowntree a while ago where he did talk about that issue of shopping. And there is no justifiable evidence that says people pay more in the round when they're in a car than when they're walking or when they're in a bike or when they're in a bus. The vast majority of purchases aren't a couch on the crossbar. The vast majority of money that is spent is I'll get a meal, I'll go into a shop, I'll buy a chair. It's that kind of spending. So like the economic analysis doesn't back that up.
If you talk to any Chamber of Commerce at the moment throughout the country in relation to the changes that are happening within parking and within transport, they will tell you that they are making it more difficult to purchase. And for sure,
I'm talking specifically about cities though.
You're for sure about the vast majority of purchase, but unfortunately a lot of businesses operate on marginal changes. So, you know, a person being able to even go in and get, you know, a pair of shoes and bring that home on their bicycle, for example, or even, you know, relatively small purchase, it makes it more difficult. So all I'm saying is we do want to get to a situation where we do take, there are less public cars, but the Green Party especially are using the stick and they're not using the carrots in changing people's behaviours. And we need to have proper investment into public transport first and foremost before you make these decisions. Many people simply do not have access to public transport, and many people are getting it harder to actually pay the tolls that are happening. Like if you look last year, for example,
the
government made 3.5 billion euros on fuel taxes last year. That was the highest level of fuel taxes that they made in the last 10 years. That was in the middle of the cost of living crisis. And yet, many people do not have an alternative in terms of a different mode of transport. They're forced to use a car. They're forced to pay those high expenses. And it's hitting a lot of people's pockets.
Okay, some of the comments coming in. Traffic plan is good, but has many flaws. Now we're pushing traffic down our landmark street, O'Connell Street. That's totally wrong. That's from Glenn. Why do young, fit, healthy cyclists think the whole population of Dublin is a young, healthy, fit cyclist who can cycle everywhere? Is she for real? That's you, Pauline. Or perhaps older people just need to stay out of towns. Maybe that's the solution.
Can I come into all of that? Because I think it's really unfair to suggest that because you want to make it more accessible for everybody that you're stopping some people from continuing on with their life. Like, the reality is when you put in cycle lanes, there's actually always more accessible parking put in rather than less. And it's about removing.
Sorry, give me that again.
One second. Now, it's about removing some of the car traffic, the people who don't need to be on it, so that it makes it easier for the people who do need to be on cars. So instead of having 10 people in front of you in the queue, in the traffic jam, you only have a couple of people because they are genuinely the people who need to be getting into town. And it's not just about Dublin. This is about everywhere. Like Pather is saying, nothing has changed. Like there's 7 new services now on the Galway to Dublin line, for instance, making it easier and easier. And the trains are packed. There's many more carriages. There are, as I said, 1 new rural bus service every single week. And we have reduced the costs on fares on buses, which means that more and more people are getting it. Yeah. But we also have to take these measures. You're saying we're not doing anything. We are. We're taking these measures in order to make it easier to get around.
If you're a young person coming in from anywhere in the commuter hell, which is, Wicklow, Meath, Louth and Kildare, and you have a new job and you turn up for your bus and your bus is late and the next bus that goes past is stuffed and then you arrive at work and you're late, you can do that maybe three or four times. Your boss is going to say to you after five or six times, you cannot do this anymore. You then have no choice to use the public transport system in that area. You are forced back into your car, but you have to pay higher taxes. You've less places to park and now you can't cross the city as well. So all I'm saying is get the public transport right first before you actually penalise people.
The point that's been made, simple one, Pauline, fix the option first.
But that's what we're doing, Pat. That's what we're doing.
No, Bus Connects is not there yet.
Well, this is what we have to do. We have to put in place the infrastructure so that the buses can get in easier. But these are tiny, tiny changes that are being made, incremental changes.
Lorcan.
And I've outlined all of the various things that we've done. But we can't keep talking about the same thing.
I think
thing
you've
going
said that a few
circles.
Times.
Yeah, look, I think it's always part of any of these changes where you're always looking at, do you get the services absolutely perfect before you make the change? Or do you make the change that maybe might mean in a year's time you have the space to get the services right? And I understand both sides of that argument. I would be on the latter. I would say just do it, make the change, and then therefore there'd be less cars coming in. As a quick example, I live in the middle of the city centre. My daughter's creche, which I was dropping her this morning, is about a 10-minute walk from where I am. It's about a 2-minute drive, all right? I normally walk. This morning, it was a bit hard to get her out of the house, and I said, you know what, I'll hop in the car, it'll be easier. I should not be allowed to do that. I should not be able to do that. I shouldn't be. It's those kind of pointless jerseys that you made. It makes my life a little bit easier, but my life doesn't need to be that easy. It's easy enough already. I already live in the city centre. So I think there's some of those journeys. Well, Pat, I think the issue that you're talking about is totally different. It's much, much harder for the people who are commuting from further afield. But we're talking about the Dublin city element of it here. And I think if we're talking about rural Ireland, it'd be a different discussion. I think the Dublin city element of it makes sense. But if you remove the cars, those commuting from Meath, the buses will turn up on time.
Can I, the problem is actually a third of the country is now part of the commuter belts for Dublin. People are commuting to Dublin now from Munster, Connacht and Ulster every single day. And I can give you on a typical day, the number of bus cancellations in Bus Éireann, 8, 9, 10 bus cancellations just from Dublin City those journeys are taking 2 hours in and out of the likes of Navan at the moment because of the bus cancellations, because the drivers are not being employed and the mechanics are not being employed. The delivery of infrastructure is the big weakness of this government. They can actually close down roads. They can delete car parking spaces. They can taxi all day long. But ask them to actually deliver public transport infrastructure on a necessary basis. They can.
That's not what the bus companies say, though. What the bus companies are saying is that delays are happening because there's too many cars on the road and because
In fairness, the parliamentary questions I'm getting back to the Minister from Transport, the excuses are the lack of drivers and mechanics.
All right. Look, we have to leave it there. We didn't intend to go on so long about that. So many others wanted to talk about America and all of that. But no more time. Lorcan Nyhan, Head of Training at the Communications Clinic and columnist with the Sunday Independent. Thank you, Pauline O'Reilly, Green Party Senator, and Pat the Tobin, Leader of AIMTU. Thank you all very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
You've got enough on your plate. Mundane meals shouldn't be one of them. Get an endless variety of the freshest, best-tasting food from award-winning chefs delivered to your door with Cook Unity, all at a fraction of the cost and time you're spending now. Take a load off and leave your meal prep to Cook Unity, affordable food crafted by award-winning chefs delivered straight to your door. Go to cookunity.com/podcast or enter code PODCAST before checkout for 50% off your first week.